Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Tom Allen. I should start off by telling you a bit about me. I'll put this over here, out of the way. I always like to start off by telling people a bit about me, because you might have come here tonight not knowing anything about me, in which case you're probably here as somebody's boyfriend. But recently I was described as being like Kirsty Allsop. Trapped inside Phil Spencer. So I thought I'll have that. And I'm gay, yep, still gay, yes. You wouldn't cheer if you'd seen me do it, yes. If anything, I'm getting worse. And I'm completely gay as well. Like, I've never tried it any other way. I've never tried it with a woman. I'm a thoroughbred. And I have tried to fit in with heterosexual society at various points. Like, once I went to a football match, but somebody called me mate, and I thought, no thanks. And the thing to remember about me is I've never really fit in. Like, I realise I come up here and I sound all posh, probably quite intimidatingly so to you. But I'm actually from a very ordinary family, very ordinary London family. They speak almost entirely in Cockney rhyming slang. They're always talking about the stairs. And like recently, as an example, recently it was my dad's birthday. I bought him a voucher for afternoon tea at the Ritz. Nothing cliched about that, thank you. My brother, on the other hand, rented him a skip? My dad was over the fucking moon! And like, I never fit in as a child. I remember my parents would be trying to get me ready for school. I'd be swishing round in a silk dressing gown, pretending to be Noel Coward. Get in the car! Mother, please! And yes, I always insisted on doing the Easter table centerpiece using flowers from the garden. And yes, I still had to come out. Like, I remember all the other children, they wanted to build a fort. I built a conservatory. And then as a teenager, everyone wanted to sneak into clubs and pubs. I wanted to sneak into Laura Ashley. And then in my 20s, everyone wanted to settle down, get a job. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, and a gay stand-up comedian at that. And now I'm in my 30s. Oh no, I look younger, don't I? But now I'm in my 30s. I don't need to explain myself to anybody because I finally made it as a gay stereotype. I've done it. I'm 35. I live with my mother. Nothing wrong with men in their 30s living with their mothers, of course, is there? They made a film about that, didn't they? It's called Psycho! Let me tell you, those Laura Ashley curtains look fabulous in that conservatory. And as well, I realise a lot of you will be sat there going, oh, the gays, why do I keep going on about it all the time? The gays, I don't know who these people are. The gays, why do they keep talking about it? They've got the gay marriage now. And it's true, we do have gay marriage, or as I like to call it, garage. And garage is designed to bring equality so that gay people can finally be as miserable as straight people. And it comes up against a lot of opposition in various parts of the world now, from a lot of like religious groups and clubs. Clubs? The Catholic Church. And you can understand why. I'm sure we all remember the Bible stories from school. Do you remember the one where Jesus stood on the mount and everyone had come to hear what he had to say? Very much like you with me. And he stood on the mountain and he said, verily I say to thee, love thy neighbors as love thyself, look after the poor, heal the sick, feed the hungry, don't start fights or wars, just look after each other, love each other, and you'll all be fine. But I cannot stand them fucking queers! Oh, I think it's disgusting what they do to each other. I mean, why have they got to be so up in your face about it all the time? I mean, who's the wife? It's a very famous parable. So you can understand why they have a problem. And as far as I can tell from the outside, right, marriage, right, for anybody, are there any married people here? It's popular, isn't it? As far as I can tell from the outside, marriage for anybody seems to be basically where you go, I don't have a very good credit rating. But you have got a job? If we can combine, then we can get closer to achieving my dream of owning my own house. So you sign the contract, and afterwards, married couples, what they seem to do is they go, right, we're going to save up a deposit, and then we're going to try and buy a house. And then they buy the house, and then they go, right, don't worry about anything else, just keep paying off the mortgage. That's all we're going to do now, just keep paying off the mortgage. Yeah, I don't really like you anymore. Just keep paying off the mortgage. That's what we've got to do. Just keep paying off the mortgage. Yeah, we'll have a chat if you want. If it shuts you up, let's just hope it doesn't look like you. Just keep paying off the mortgage. That's what we've got to do. Just keep paying off the mortgage. Yeah, we'll go on holiday together because it's cheaper. Just don't look at me. Just keep paying off the mortgage. Keep paying off the mortgage. Yeah, I know you had an affair. I turned a blind eye. Just keep paying off the mortgage. Keep paying off the mortgage. And then as you get a bit older, it seems to turn into a bit of a game. And basically, whoever outlives the other one wins a house. You win a whole house? It's a great game. So I can see why so many of you signed up for it. Now, now I have to do the bit I have to do by law. It's where I talk to people who've sat near the front. So we'll get it out of the way, nice and quickly. Yo, what's your name? What? Mark. Oh, that's a terrible name, isn't it? Because people spill things on themselves and then they go, oh, I've got a mark on my trousers. Mark. What do you do, Mark? Data networks. Data networks. Are you waving to the crowds of people thrilled to hear about your data networks, man? Data networks. What is your name? Helen. Hello. And Andy. Helen and Andy together? How long? Too long, says Helen. No. How long? How long, Andy? 18 years. You know, in America, they would have clapped at that. Not here. No, look at them bastards. Happy for 18 years. Or, you know, together. No, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I'm so flattered. And we're here at the London Palladium, and it's sold out. So thank you very much for that. Although there are a couple of empty seats, so we can only assume those people died. Which is a sad way to begin our evening, I realise. But what is a show, really, other than a distraction from our own inevitable deaths? And what a time to be alive as well. We've got so many things to worry about, so many things on our mind. We've got to worry about Trump. We've got to worry about Trump and America. We've got to worry about Russia, North Korea, global warming. Then there's other things, Bake Off. And then there's all this pressure on us as well, pressure that we've never seen before. Like, we've all got to take selfies all the time, short for selfish. Doesn't matter what day it is. It's your grandmother's funeral. Shut up, get your lips out. I do think, what sort of a world are we leaving behind us? Like, imagine being born into this world now. Imagine being a child now. Like, they are under so much pressure. As an example, recently I was in Marks and Spencer's because, Helen, I have a fabulous life. And there was a little boy walking around with his mum, and the little boy had taken his jumper off. And the mum said to him, if you're not going to wear that jumper, you've got to carry it. I'm not going to carry it for you. You've got to carry that jumper. And out of nowhere, the little boy, he turned to his mum and he went, you've ruined my life! Which I thought was a ridiculous thing to say because she probably has ruined his life, but he won't know that for years and years. Loads of therapy. And then later on, I was in the queue to pay for a chunky chocolate flapjack. I love a chunky chocolate flapjack, Helen. up ahead of me in the queue was the same little boy and his little sister who was in a pushchair, right? And the little boy had learned to play the game peekaboo with his little sister. So you can imagine everybody in the queue in Marks, they love this, don't they? They love this. Oh, this is wonderful. Oh, this is beautiful. Oh, this is what we came out of the house to see. Something beautiful like this. Not to buy this pair of elasticated waisted jeans. And, right, you can imagine the game, peekaboo, right? It's a lovely thing to see, right? Imagine it, right? Imagine it, imagine it, right? Imagine it. Peekaboo. It's a lovely thing. Lovely, lovely thing to see. Peekaboo, the little girl was really laughing. On the third time, though, he got a bit bored. Peekaboo, smash her in the face! And then what happened is the little girl, she really lost her fucking shit! And she did that screaming that kids sometimes do of going, and then screaming! And then everybody turned round, and the mannequins turned round, and the people in next door turned round. And then the mum comes over and said, what on earth's happened here? And then the little boy starts to cry in that way that some kids sometimes cry, which is by talking and sobbing at the same time. So the mum said, what on earth's happened here? The little boy looked at his mum and went, I smashed her in the face! And the mum said, well, why? Why did you smash her in the face? And the little boy looked at his mum and went, because I wanted to! Which is actually a very good argument. And then the mum was getting really annoyed by this one. So, no, why did you really do it? And then the little boy looked at his mum and said, perhaps the strangest thing I have ever heard a small child say. He looked at his mum and went, I can't be what you want me to be! Just peculiar. Like, how much pressure is this child under? He's learned to talk like a Dalek with a social conscience. And when you think now, children, they get like bullied online. When I was a child, all you had to worry about was turning up at school. Like, are there any primary school teachers here? Yeah. Well, firstly, you should have put your hand up. Can you imagine if you'd done that at school? But like now, teachers, they have like TAs in the classroom. Well, I went to school long before the Territorial Army. I had to get involved in education. It was a simpler time, an easier time, when you just had one teacher. Do you remember one teacher? And then you'd have like 35 or 50 million children in one classroom. You were basically just sat there in the background, basically just watching one person have a nervous breakdown before your very eyes. And I remember my teacher being like, right, okay, we're gonna do maths now. We'll do maths now. Yeah, okay, tens, hundreds, thousands. Okay, yeah, put those bricks away. Okay, now we do reading. Yeah, reading. Come and sit on the mat. Come and sit on the mat. Don't piss yourself again. Come and sit on the mat. Read a bit. Can you read? Doesn't matter, we don't have time. All right, okay, now we're doing geography. Geography now, geography. Do you know where this is? Oh, it doesn't matter, we don't own it anymore. Okay, now we'll do art, now art. Okay, everyone, draw this thing. Yes, hold up your drawings. Yes, gold star view, smiley face view, houseboat view. What does it mean? No one fucking knows. Okay, now we'll do crafts. Now, crafts, we're gonna make a picture of a house out of pasta. Probably the closest your generation will ever get to owning their own house. Unless you get married and... All right, now we'll do nature. Now, nature, everyone go to the playground. Go to the playground so I can have a drink. Go to the playground. Go and get a leaf. Go and get a leaf. Yes, get a leaf. Bring your leaves in. Bring your leaves in. Bring your leaves in. Don't bring the mud in, you stupid prick. Bring your leaves in, everyone. Bring your leaves in. Now hold up your leaf. Now draw your leaf. Now sketch your leaf. Now trace your leaf. Trace all day. You've got to be able to trace. You'll never be able to get a job unless you can trace. Trace as much as you can, for goodness sake, trace. And colour in within the lines. No one will love you unless you can colour in within the lines. Maybe that's why he left me. Yeah, do a bark rubbing if you want, Lindsay, you show-off little bitch. All right, everyone, take your leaves and put them on the wall and do them in the shape of a tree and do it nicely because it's for open day, which you don't understand, but my job fucking depends on it. Okay, now we'll do history. First World War, everybody died. Now we're going to write a poem about that, inexplicably. Maybe learn about onomatopoeia, very useful skill for later life. Okay, now we'll do the Tudors. Everyone got their head chopped off, but in a fun way. Okay, now we'll do the Egyptians. This is Queen Nefertiti. Okay, draw Nefertiti. Okay, put your Nefertiti this way. Okay, now you're going to mummify your teddy bear. You're going to wrap your teddy bear in toilet paper. It teaches you. Fuck off. But it keeps you quiet for 5 fucking minutes while I can try poppers. Okay. now you desire a sarcophagus for your teddy bear, a coffin for your teddy bear, so don't think about being dead. One day we'll all be dead, cold and dead in the ground, which I wish I was. I wish I was dead, you bunch of fucking... Oh my goodness, children, it's time to go out and play. Play, 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 play. And that's all you had to worry about. Delish. The only I asked for a table I could lean on. Don't trust that at all. No, the only other stress, I think, if you're a child, is if it's someone's birthday. And I do think the social world for six-year-olds is really quite exhausting. Like, say it was someone's birthday in your class. Say it was, like, Ryan's birthday in your class. Ryan would have been bought a pad of pre-printed invitations on which he would have had to fill in his details. So you'd basically get an invitation which basically read, Ryan is having a birthday party on the 23rd of May! Please come to my party. And then there'd be a dotted line, which you'd hope would be perforated, but you'd have to get the scissors. And then underneath that, you'd have to write in your details. You'd have to write, Tom, would like, slash, would like not, please delete as appropriate, to come to your party. And if you said you were going, and you filled that form in, and you handed it in, that would be a contract. A contract on which you could not renege. And then what would happen is you'd forget all about Ryan's birthday party until the day of Ryan's birthday party, and then your mum would walk in and she'd say, oh, shit. It's Ryan's birthday party. We ain't bought him nothing. You can't go empty-handed. People will think we're poor. What is Ryan like? And this was a time in history when I'd say something like, oh, I don't know, maybe a Tamagotchi. My mum would say, what the fuck is a Tamagotchi? So it's just like a bit of fun. It's a key ring. You've got to give it food and water. Keep it alive. Make sure it doesn't die. And I remember my mum saying, we've been doing that for you for 6 years. None of that is a bit of fun. And anyway, you get the Tamagotchi, take it home, wrap it up. Then your mum would whiten your trainers using a special magic whitening fluid. It came in a special magic bottle with a round sponge at the end. And I'd always say, Mum, why are you doing that? And she'd say, it's because I want people to know I care about you. Which, to be honest, I didn't know was in question. And then you'd be driven around to Ryan's house complaining all the way. Your mum saying, you'll enjoy it when you get there. Knowing full well, you wouldn't, right? You'd get there, you'd be allowed to walk up the path on your own in the background. You'd hear the sound of, meow, which was your parents fucking off. Deserting you for the afternoon with these strangers. Walk up the path, you'd ring the doorbell. Ryan's mum, Anne, would answer the door. Anne was having a very stressful time. Anne, because Anne was organising the birthday party and the party bags. And party bags back then were very stressful. I'm sure party bags now are all just iPads and Taramasalata. But back then, it was a tiny plastic bag filled with felt-tip pens, a box of Smarties, a tube of refreshers, and then a tiny game where you had to get a ball bearing. into a hole, which was enough. And Anne would say, come into my house, please be careful with it, I've worked very hard, you'll probably never afford one. Come into my house, take your shoes off. You spend most of your time, as a child, putting on your shoes and taking them back off again. Which was always very stressful for me because I didn't learn to tie my shoelaces until quite late. And my parents would always say to me, what are you gonna do when you grow up if you can't tie your shoelaces? What are you gonna do? I mean, your tracing skills already bad enough. What are you gonna do when you grow up if you can't tie your shoelaces? And I'd always respond by saying, duh, espadrilles. Still had to come out. You go into the party, right? You'd have to give Ryan his birthday present. You'd hope no one had bought him the same thing. Inevitably, someone had, probably someone like Kevin in my class. Kevin was my arch enemy. Arch, because he was also gay. And he didn't even have the courtesy to hate himself for it. Can you imagine how obnoxious that was? Saying things like, oh, Anne, I like your curtains. No, Kevin, that's my special thing. And then, right then, you'd have to go into the party. Then you'd have to meet Ryan's dad. And you never met people's dads back then because they were always out having affairs. working. And Ryan's dad will be taking you out to do some sort of activity like 10-pin bowling. Now, bearing in mind, this was a time when it was completely fine to transport 15 children in one stranger's car. There'd be three of you sellotaped in the front, 10 of you in the back, all in shell suits. I mean, you were packed in so tightly, if you went over a speed bump, you could rub together, you could catch fire. And then, as a treat, two of you would have to travel in the boot. You say, "Sir, I'm taking the parcel shelf off so you can breathe. But remember, if you see the police, get down." Completely fine to say to children. And then you get to like the mega bowl, right? You'd run in, you have to take your shoes off again, have to take your shoes off again. I don't know why I bother putting shoes on at all today, right? But as you know, at 10-pin bowling, you all have to take your shoes. Everyone has to take their shoes off. You have to put on the grandma shoes. We all know that. We all have to put on the grandma shoes. It's very precious because the floor of the bowling, it cannot take outdoor shoes. It's a very precious floor. Very precious, the floor of the bowling. It's a bit like the floor of the gym at secondary school where you go for year assembly. Do you remember that? Everyone had to take their shoes off to go into year assembly in the gym. Do you remember that? It was a right faff, wasn't it? But everyone had to do it. Everyone except that one girl. Do you remember that one girl? Never had to take her shoes off. Do you remember her? Because she was always allowed to wear trainers. Do you remember her? Always carrying crutches. Never seemed to need them though, did she? Always had glandular fever or a twisted ankle. Always had a note to get out of PE. What was wrong with her? No one knew, no one knew. Where is that girl now? Where is she? Where is she? Well, she's dead. So, then you'd go into the bowling and then it would dawn on you. You had no idea how to bowl because you were like 6 years old and you weren't Roseanne Barr's husband, right? And so, you'd go into the bowling, right? You'd have to choose a ball. You always felt like you had to prove something. So you'd choose a ball that was far too heavy for you. Could barely get your fingers round it, right? You'd pick up this ball, drag it to the end of the lane, lob it into the middle of the lane. You would immediately go in the gutter, and that would be the end of your experience of bowling. And I remember thinking, even then, why is this floor so precious we cannot wear outdoor shoes on it? But it's completely fine to take a 15-kilogram marble and smash it into the middle of it. And then you'd have to go back to Ryan's house for a birthday tea, which Anne would have organised resentfully. And a birthday tea back then would have consisted of crisps and chocolate together, which is disgusting, and pink wafers. Do you remember pink wafers? Oh, so delicious. Oh, the taste of pink. Oh. And what are they made of? Silibang? Nobody knows. And then you have party rings! Oh, party rings. Never as much fun as they sound. Party rings. And what is a party ring anyway? It's basically just a dried up biscuit covered in enamel. Just you're trying to get your teeth through that, suddenly the lights would go out and I'd always think, oh my God, are we being raided? But no, then what happened is Anne would suddenly re-emerge quite satanically underlit by flames. And she'd walk in going, ha, 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 the happiest day of your year. We sing to the most dreary song in the world, happy birthday. Then Ryan would have to blow out his candles. He'd basically just spit all over a cake. Make a wish, Ryan, maybe for a dry cake. But you'd never get to taste it because Anne would whisk it away into the kitchen, chop it up into chunks, shove all those chunks in a paper Transformers napkin, put all those chunks in their party bags, hand those out to everybody, then turn to everybody and go, get the fuck out of my house! Oh, it was a wonderful time to be alive. And I realise I've been talking a lot about childhood and suburbia, and I guess that's because, as I say, I've been living with a couple. They're called Dad and Mum. And people often say to me, like, do your parents really speak so differently to you? And I always say, yes. And the example I like to give is I remember when I was a child waiting to be picked up from school, from primary school, and I was just waiting at the gates at the end of the school day with my teacher. She was crying. And just waiting to be picked up, and then eventually my mum appeared in her car and she saw us and she wound down the window and she shouted,
"Hey Tom, where have you been? I've been waiting at the end of the road like a cunt." See you tomorrow. We're not cut from fancy cloth, you see. And I'm sorry to use that dreadful word, Helen, especially when you've worn that lovely top. Now, no, I won't sit down because it undermines the job title. Now, I don't want you to think I'm a total failure tonight, ladies and gentlemen, just because I live at home with my mum and dad. Because one of the things I recently did is I finally passed my driving test! And you would not clap if you'd seen me do it! I am not very good, and I found the whole process very stressful, and I got quite nervous. People aren't very much help if you're feeling nervous. Like, if you say to someone, "Oh, I'm feeling nervous," they go, "Oh, don't be nervous!" "Oh, thanks very much, I hadn't thought of it like that." It's like if you're crying and someone goes, "Oh, don't cry. Oh yeah, just switch it off, shall I?" And I had three tests, driving tests, thank you, Mark. And the third one went very well, although at one point the examiner was scrabbling at the door. And it was as we were leaving a roundabout and I saw her do it and I went, "Oh my God, I've done it wrong, haven't I? I failed. I'm there. Let's go back. I can't bear it. She went, "It's all right. No, it's all right. I just asked you to take the fifth exit off the roundabout and you've taken the fourth exit off the roundabout." I said, "Well, I've done it wrong then, haven't I? I failed. Let's go back. I can't bear it. She went, "No, it's all right. We can't fail you for not being able to count." Isn't that terrifying? So we got back to the base, because they work out of a base, don't they? They're like the army, if the army fought with clipboards. And we got back there and she said, "Thank you very much, Tom." And then there was this big pause and I thought, oh, I hope she's not gonna tell me that I haven't passed. Because it'd be dreadful to be told I was a failure by a person in a gilet. And she said, "Thank you very much, Tom. I can tell you, you have passed your test. And it's a wonderful feeling when you pass your driving test." But then it dawned on me that then what I had to do is I then had to learn how to drive. So I went back and I told my parents and they were really pleased for me. I think that was the look on their face. Their mouths dropped open. And they very kindly agreed to insure me on their car, which is a Ford Fiesta Finesse. It's from 2003, it's a 1.5 litre engine, it's maroon, it goes with nothing. And there's gaffer tape holding on the wing mirrors, there's moss on the back windows. To quote the song Grease Lightning, it's a real pussy wagon. And where I live is a place in sort of southeast London, Kent borders. Technically, I am a Kent. And it's a place called Bromley. And, oh, how nice, so many of you are here. And in Bromley, when people first pass their driving test, everyone has to go on this one rite of passage drive to an out-of-town shopping centre, which goes by the name of Blue Water. And if for some reason you've never heard of it, just imagine the Emerald City. But the thing is, right, people in Bromley, they don't say, "Come on, let's go to Blue Water." Instead, what they say is, "We're gonna go Blue Water!" And I thought, I don't want to go on my own. I know, I'll take someone with me. I'll take my dad with me because I've got a good relationship with my dad. And I thought this would be a great way to end it. And bearing in mind, the last thing my dad taught me how to do was how to box. Yeah. When I was a very small child, I think he had an inkling that maybe I was going to get picked on. And I remember him standing there going, "It's all right, I'm just going to punch my hand. That's all you're going to do, just punch my hand." I was cowering in the corner going, "No, Dad, no, I can't deal with confrontation. It doesn't sound right in my accent." My dad was going, "Oh, I thought you'd be much better at this. I mean, you've already got the silk dressing gown on and everything."
And bearing in mind, my dad is 77 years old. He was born during the Blitz. He's at a point in his life, he doesn't care what people think. Like, he'll regularly end a conversation by going, "Ah, I'm bored of you now." And he still works, and for most of my life, he's been a coach driver, and he doesn't drive anymore, but he works in the office. And when it's someone's birthday, before they do the ceremony of the ha, 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 the sing and stare, everyone goes around with a card, right? And everyone writes in this card, like, happy birthday, lots of love, happy birthday, all my love, it's too much love. So my dad has taken to writing in these cards, shove it! People respect him more. So, right, Dad's gonna come with me on this rite of passage drive to Blue Isle, right? We get in the Ford Fiesta, finesse. There's already a tension because Dad sees driving and the roads very much as his world, right? And we're going along and we come to some traffic lights and they're red. That means you have to stop. I've done the theory test as well. And I always get nervous stopping at the front of a line of traffic because I always think, oh my God, everybody's looking at me. I really am smashing stereotypes, left, right, and downstage center. And I waited for the lights to go from red to amber to green, and I went to drive off, and then what happened is I stalled the engine. And my dad, bless him, he turned to me and he said, "Concentrate!" Which is such a calming thing to say. I said, "I am concentrating." He said, "Yeah, but you're dead and did you." It's like his thing, "You're dead and did you." Anyway, by this point, the lights gone back to red. I decided to put the radio on because I'd heard music can be calming. On this occasion, they were playing Tracy Chapman's Fast Car. Which is actually my favourite song, but on this occasion, it did feel like Tracy was really rather mocking me. And what happened during this time as well is another car pulled up behind us, and this car was a BMW. If you don't know much about driving, BMW drivers are the nicest drivers in the world. So I waited for the lights to go from red to amber to green, and I went to drive off, and again, I stalled the engine. Dad goes, "Concentrate." I said, "I am concentrating." He said, "Yeah, but you did and did you, you did and did you." And then to make matters worse, the BMW driver behind us then bipped his bibber. Bipped his bibber? What would you say, Helen? Bipped his bibber? Bipped his bibber? Horn, what, just on its own, horn? Beeped his horn? Oh, don't be so disgusting. The BMW driver behind us bibbed his bibber, right? My dad, rather than placating the situation, turned around and gave them the middle finger. At which point they just leant on their bibber. But I panicked, just drove off. I don't know what the lights were doing at this point. I think there may have been people still on the crossing. In fact, I think I saw that girl from school still on her crutches. I knew she didn't need them. Right. We drove off, but then the BMW pursued us. They pursued us, right? And then they overtook us. And then someone leapt out of the passenger window and shouted at us, "You fucking cunt!" And I'm sorry to use that dreadful word again, Helen, especially when you want that lovely top. I immediately turned into this Victorian schoolgirl, going, "But why, Dad? Why are people so mean, so cruel, so unkind?" My dad responded by explaining, "It's 'cause they're slags!" "They're lowlife, they're scum! Tell them to fuck off!" I said, "I can't tell them to fuck off, it doesn't sound right in my accent! You do something right for once in your life, tell them to fuck off!" So I had to do it, and I had to do it! Fuck off! But then we were behind them, Dad goes, show them you're angry, flash your lights at them. I went to flash my lights at them. I turned on the windscreen wipers. It was like a pride parade coming up behind them. Water going everywhere, Dad's going, "Concentrate." I said, "I am concentrating." He said, "Yeah, but you're dead and did you? And don't worry, everyone, because I did get my own back on my dad, because a little while after this, I decided to take my parents out. Not in, like, a drive-by. Though I could do with a house. You can't really do a drive-by when you can't go above second gear, though, can you? And just give me a minute. Anyway, no,
I decided to take them out for the afternoon, and I took them to the Tate Modern Gallery, you know, on the south bank of the River Thames. You know, very lovely, very much my world, the Tate Modern, looking at all the modern art. I thought we were having a lovely time looking at all this modern art. I don't know if there is a limit, though, to the number of times you can hear two baby boomers exclaim, "Well, I could have done that!" To which I was very happy to respond, "Yeah, but you didn't, did you?" To keep going to Blue Eye, it was like the Canterbury Tales. And eventually we got there, you know, I saw the lights of John Lewis. I thought, oh, thank God, I'm home. And we got into the car park, I found a space, I stopped the car, I went to put the handbrake on, and as I went to put the handbrake on, I realized it was already on. Now, has anybody here been invited to a hen party? I get invited to them as the token gay. I never get invited to the stag parties. I don't know why. Maybe people think I would be very good at zip wiring through North Wales. And I got invited to this hen party recently. It was my friend Kate from school, and it was being organized by her chief bridesmaid, Emma. And Emma is, how would you describe Emma? Emma is passive aggressive. And so we all got this email from Emma going, "Hi guys, hope you're well. It's Emma here. I'm organizing Kate's hen party. It's been really stressful, actually." Oh, shut up, Emma, don't do it then. She said, "I kept the costs really low because I know you guys can't afford very much." Rude. And then she said, "Please read all the information. I've kept the information really brief, so please make sure you read all the information." Anyway, she hadn't kept it brief at all. I thought, I'm not going to read this. I've never read Proust. So I did what anybody would have done, and I ignored it. And then, 2 weeks later, I got another email from Emma going, "Hi, Tom, hope you're well," which I knew she did not mean. She said, "I needed to hear from you for my spreadsheet." Oh, nothing says fun like Excel. She said, "I need to hear from you for my spreadsheet, but I didn't hear from you, so I've just assumed that you're a yes." What? You can't assume I'm a yes. I didn't tear off my slip at the bottom and handed my contract. And I knew I couldn't get out of it because suddenly I was added to a WhatsApp group. WhatsApp, 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 WhatsApp. I'll tell you what's up. I looked at my phone. I had 324 notifications from people I did not know. I'm in this WhatsApp group with the mother of the bride. We've all got to call her mum, her sister, Auntie Wendy. Right, they're all sending selfies to each other all day. Except Auntie Wendy can't send a selfie, can she? Somehow she manages to send a video of her eyebrow. Twice, it's used up all my data, all my storage on my phone has been used up. Then at the end of the video, something pink covers the lens, which you assume is a finger, but you don't like to ask. Then the day of this dream hen party arrived, right? We had to go to this dream hen cottage, which Emma had organised. Turned out this dream hen cottage was just outside Reading. Right, don't whoop that. And then, right, I had to drive myself there. It took 6 hours. I pulled up on the gravel, I stopped the car, I put the handbrake on again. I donned a pink sash and a penis headdress and I got out of the car. I had to go into the hen party, and then I had to introduce myself to all the other hens. Now, if there is one thing worse than being invited to a hen party as the token gay, it's if they've invited another token gay. And who was it? Kevin from school. Except Kevin's turned into a better gay than me. He's trained as a dancer. He's got a hat on. You can't compete with that. He's got a feather bow around his neck. He throws a dildo at Auntie Wendy's face. She thinks he's hilarious. Then we're all being marched off by fucking Emma. I mean Emma. To do these activities she'd organised. I mean, it was like being conscripted into national service. We started the day with a guacamole making class. What the fuck? It's a guacamole making class. You can't chop an avocado, it's basically just mush.
Then we had to go to a tango lesson. A tango lesson at 11 o'clock in the morning. I can't do it. I haven't got the hips for it. Kevin can. He's actually very talented. Then we had to go on a gondola ride. A gondola ride round Reading. I mean, it's hardly Venice, is it, when you're going past a Matalan? People going, oh, it's just like St. Mark's Square, isn't it? Or is that Astor Car Park? Then that was interrupted because suddenly we had to go for a craft-a-noon. What the fuck is a craft-a-noon? It's basically a stitch and bitch, Helen. Anyway, we got in there. Kevin starts making a quilt. What sort of a pompous prick tries to make a quilt in one afternoon? I got the pastor out, tried to make a picture of a house. No one knew what I was doing. Right, then we had to make a cushion that was supposed to look like a heart. Mine looked more like a spleen. Right, then we're all being rounded up by Emma to go back to the Dream Hen Cottage. Oh yeah, we've all got to go back in one cab, one car again. Where am I? In the boot with Kevin. Get down, the police. Not like that, Kevin. Then we got back to the Dream Hen Cottage and suddenly it was my allocated 12 minutes in the hot tub. Oh yeah, there's a hot tub. I got in it with Mum and Auntie Wendy. I got in it though, just as the bubbles stop. Have you ever gone in a hot tub as the bubbles stop? You're basically just getting in a bath with strangers. All of you staring at each other going, well, I guess this is life. Right, then that was interrupted because suddenly we had to go in for the buffet that Mum and Auntie Wendy had organised. Oh my God, their buffets are legendary. They're amazing, you're gonna love their buffets. Oh my God, they're incredible. It was probably the worst buffet experience of my entire life. I got in there, I looked at this buffet. There was so much beige. It was so bland. It was like a buffet representation of Reading. No offense. And I looked across this buffet, right? They put out sausage rolls, right? Sausage rolls, right? Where they just whipped off the cellophane and put the corrugated plastic straight down on the table. Like we were dogs! Then we had scotch eggs, right? Scotch eggs cut into quarters. Apparently no one can eat a whole one. Then we had breadsticks displayed in a pint glass. I thought I was at a fucking UKIP rally. Then the dips come out, don't they? The quadrant of dips, the four dips of the apocalypse. The white one, the other white one. The green one, what's that? I knew it wasn't guacamole from the class this morning. Then there's a pink one, what's that made of? Silly bang, nobody knows. Right, then Wendy comes in with this massive bag of crisps. I said, Wendy, don't you want to put them in a bowl, make them look nice? She went, oh no, we all know where they've come from. Oh sure, Wendy, next time just bring out a fucking potato. Then she starts putting down cold pizza slices next to wontons. I mean, no one's mixed Italian and Chinese cuisine like that since Marco Polo. Then she brings in barbecue hula hoops for dinner. Barbecue hula hoops for dinner. Barbecue hula hoops. 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 Barbecue hula hoops for dinner. Barbecue hula hoops. Barbecue hula hoops. Who's putting hula hoops on a grill? Then she came in with probably the biggest quiche I have ever seen. And I don't like quiche because it's basically just omelette pie. And I don't like savoury pastries. Sorry to get political with you. She puts it down on the table. Then she walks off. Then she goes, oh, I suppose I better cut that into slices. Yes, Wendy! No one wants to eat a whole fucking quiche! Suddenly we're all being whisked off into the sitting room. Well, they called it a lounge, Helen, they can't help it. We went through to the sitting room to do karaoke. Well, I don't like doing karaoke because I don't like doing performances I haven't prepared for. I'm not always as entertaining as I've been this evening. I went in there, Kevin was straight up on the coffee table doing a tap dance. I mean, it was like being in prison with Lionel fucking Blair. And he's straight up on that karaoke machine doing Dancing Queen, not even ironically, and that was gonna be my song. Then all the hens turned to me and they go, well, Tom, what song are you gonna sing? You're number two gay. Number two gay? How dare you? Because my favourite song is Fast Car by Tracy Chapman, but it doesn't sound right in my accent. I had to give it my best shot. I went in, I got up on the coffee table. Baby, got a fast car. I've got a ticket, got a set up here. I've been working at a convenience store. All these hens were looking at me confused, bored, angry, depressed. About running to the other room, grabbing that quiche off the table, running back in, smashing in that Kevin's face, and turning to the rest of them and going, I can't be what you want me to be. You guys have been amazing. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you very much. Godfrey. Get out of here. Godfrey. Very nice. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Exploring the lives and exploits of a group of passionate young MCs in Blackpool. It's Grime Up North starts next Sunday at 10. Next night to Barcelona for season 2 of A Walter Pick, a provocative thriller as a witness with explosive information sets off a deadly chain of events in Night and Day.
You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
Barbecue, hula hoop.